The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, what do you know? We're back. We got more money strategies headed your way. Hour number two of Bucket Strategy Investing gets cranked up and running, so get ready. Phone lines are open. We just have a couple of lines open. Professor Plum is standing by with me once again. Johnny Dean here, ready to answer all of your money questions. A lot to cover this hour as usual, so we're going to get right to it. As always, I did say this, your phone calls come first and your emails as well. We will be taking your phone calls in about a minute or so. If you want to reach us on the air, you can call us directly in the studio. Our in-studio hotline, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. And you send your emails to us at wealthed.com, our website, right where you see the Find Your Answer link. There near the top of the page. We'll get to more of those emails coming up a little bit later on this hour. We do have quite a few to get to. You can also get in touch with the Brain Trust off the air. You can talk to an advisor about your retirement plan. Somebody like Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors, talk to any of them about your retirement portfolio. Their number off the air, if you want a face-to-face meeting, or just want to ask a few questions, you can give them a call at Lucia Capital Group at 800-644-1150. Everyone's situation is different. Remember this, what's suitable for one person may not be and probably is not suitable for you, which is why you should call the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, have them go over your plans, your goals, and your individual situation. Again, off the air, the number 800-644-1150. We got some room, but only a little room on the phones. 877-PLANNER. We're going to start off immediately with the calls and get to some of this stuff. I mentioned to our TV audience this stupid Facebook post that's going around about Social Security. So we will talk about that, among other things. Let's start, though, with Marcia in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Marcia. How can we help you today?
Hi, Ray. Nice guy, Chris Lloyd.
Yes.
Met up with him. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we love Chris.
Go ahead.
How can we help you today? I think you said you have a Social Security question.
Yes, I do. It's a mess.
What have you got?
I was about 2 years old, and my mother sent all of her children to relatives, okay? Different relatives. So I assumed a different name.
Okay.
Surname. Never was adopted. And then my mother came to get me when I was 16, and so I went under another assumed name.
Okay, but
and worked.
So let me guess. Then you got married, and you had another name, right?
Right.
And then maybe married again. I don't know, but
no.
Okay, so
In all of this time, Marcia, you used the same Social Security number the entire time, though.
I don't know. I don't remember having one.
Well,
I had to have one.
So, you had to have one when you started working. Unless you changed Social Security numbers, the name changes are not an issue. Because everything's going under your number, and you may want to go down to the Social Security office and say, okay, here's the Social Security number I used. If you had more than one Social Security number because of the names, whatever, somebody applied for different numbers, then you'd want to go down and say, this is my Social Security number, and this is my Social Security number because I was using these names, and just get them to combine everything. But most likely, you only used one Social Security number, and you can just, all the names will kind of follow in place on that Social Security number. So
should. Yes, I would think so. I just don't remember ever having one before.
Having a Social Security number?
Mm-mm, I don't remember that.
Well, did you work?
Yes.
Okay, well, when you were working, you had to have a Social Security number.
Did you pay taxes?
Paid by check, and so I would assume, yes, they took out for Social Security.
Well, then you're going to want to...
a long time ago. I'm 74, so...
Right. Are you receiving a Social Security benefit now?
Half my husband's.
Okay, and your husband's benefit, he worked and he made more money than you did, I'm assuming. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely.
So even if you, because you didn't work at a very high wage, your benefit was probably fairly low, which means that half of his benefit was higher than yours. And so you're getting what you are entitled to at this point. Now, if you think that you're entitled to more and you want to deal with the hassle of dealing with Social Security, you can go down, get some of your old tax returns or find out what your Social Security number is and go down and say, what was my benefit just on my own work?
Okay.
All right.
But I'm not sure I'd want to, you're probably getting everything you're all entitled to now. If you have time and you want to deal with the Social Security Administration, go down and see what you can find out.
Yeah, and Marcia, okay, if you did work, you paid taxes, right?
Right.
Yeah, so it should be on your tax form, too, a Social Security number.
Okay.
All right?
All righty.
All right, thank you for the call, Marcia.
She can go down and say, here's my Social Security number. Show me my earnings history. And they can pull it up and say, oh, yeah, you paid. And she can look at it and say, oh, yeah, I worked all those years. I've got it all covered. But if they've only got 1 or 2 years in there and you know you worked more, then you're going to want to look for other ways to get your Social Security number.
Exactly. All right, 877-PLANNER. We still have just one line open now, 877-752-6637. Gresham, Oregon, we go. Ivan is next. Hello, Ivan.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Very well, thank you. How can we help you today?
Good, I sure appreciate your show.
Thanks.
It's been very informative.
Thank you.
I have a fourplex, and I do not have it up for sale, but I decided to have the buried oil tanks decommissioned and certified.
Okay.
And I knew that was going to come up sooner or later.
Yes.
And the bill is $12,000.
Okay.
And it's all completed and everything. And I did that in 2015. And I was wondering how I'm going to approach that expense. Line should I put that on? Is it a capital improvement, or is it considered a repair or a maintenance? It makes quite a difference.
Right, because the capital improvement, you don't get any current benefit from.
Right.
Maintenance and others, you could potentially write it off this year. And this is a good reason to see a good tax preparer. To be honest, I don't know the answer. I don't do taxes. I know the basics of taxes. I do okay with them. But when it comes to this type of an issue, this is a very specific issue. Most people don't have oil tanks on their properties, and so it's not a common occurrence for most people. But maybe in your area, oil tanks are very common, but I don't know the answer. I would sure be trying to figure out a way to show it as maintenance or repair so that I could write it all off. But that's between you, your accountant, and the IRS.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Ivan.
They're tough people.
Well,
the IRS is not tough. I mean, they're fairly straightforward, and you can.
Uh-huh.
But you just have to work from a position of strength. Here's what I'm doing and why I'm doing it. And if you can show them why you're doing it based on the tax regs, they're pretty reasonable people, I found.
Uh-huh.
It's the states that are a pain. You know, the Oregon State Tax Collector, the California Franchise Tax Board, the states are much worse than the IRS.
Boy, that's for sure. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for
good
the
luck,
call.
Good luck, Ivan.
Yeah, and good luck. So he's got this tank, and he's trying to...
Well, he's removing
the oil, so it's putting it out of commission.
Right, and he's cleaning up the property from an environmental issue from these other areas.
Yes.
And is that an improvement, a capital improvement to the property? I mean, you could argue that. Is it a maintenance issue? Yeah, maintaining the property, and it's an expense. Like going in and removing debris from the property.
Well, the question
is that as an expense, he gets to deduct it in 2015.
But does it have to do with the property, or that's the land issue there?
Right, but redoing the land, you can write off the expense of reconfiguring the land and doing some other things. Or is it a capital improvement because you've improved the property because now you don't have an oil well, an oil tank. This is where accountants get paid reasonable amounts of money.
Yeah, and you're right. I would rather deal with the IRS. If I had to deal with somebody, I'd rather deal with the IRS than I would with any of the state
Yeah, I have never dealt with the Oregon state tax collector, but I've dealt with the California, and they're a little more aggressive than the IRS.
Well, they have to be more aggressive because the states unlike the federal government, the states really do need tax revenue in order to spend. They cannot spend more than they take in. A state cannot manufacture its own money, so it's got to use whatever it has, and they must balance their budgets at the end of the year.
We saw how that worked the last time several of the states got together and tried to create their own money.
You're talking about this, like 100, 150 years ago or whatever
that
was?
Yeah, that didn't turn out that well.
It didn't turn out too well for them, no.
No.
All right, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We got some room on the phones. If you want to give us a call back, Richard, I know you were going to ask us about retiring at age 62. We can catch you on the other side of the break. I want to remind you, too, that we got a workshop coming up or two. Now, it's going to be next month, but the spring schedule is out already for the Lucia Capital Group 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. February 20th, well, that'll be the next one, Las Vegas, Nevada. Write it down. We got a little bit of time. You got a little over a month, but good to write it down. Take note of it in Las Vegas. You can join the Brain Trust, meet them. If you've never met them, get your questions answered there in Las Vegas. Then Saturday, February 27th, just for reference, Seattle, Washington. And then getting into March, I'm already talking about March, Phoenix, Arizona on the 12th. Again, we'll remind you as these dates get closer, but they're all free, and you can go to wealthed.com or just give us a call. If you don't see your city yet, up at wealthed.com, give us a call at 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number, and ask us about when the workshops or how you can sign up for the workshops. They're all free. And as I said, you get to meet Professor Plum. Ask your questions in person. What more could you want? What more you could want is more bucket strategy investing. We'll be coming back with more. 877-PLANNER, our number. Get on board right now. Taking your calls when we come back. Answering your money questions here on the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum back with me again today. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Coming up, some of your emails. We had one from Candace in Midlothian, Texas. We'll get to that one. Paul in Davis had kind of a long email. I don't know if we'll be able to get to it, so we'll have to condense it one way or the other. But we will be taking care of those in just a little bit. Once again, 877-PLANNER, our number. Let's get back to the phone lines. Dublin, California, talk with Raj. Hello, Raj.
Hello, guys. Happy New Year to you.
Well, thank you. Same to you.
So I'm back with a related question, actually. So in my case, I had, if you remember, I had a discussion with you. I had a 401k, and I had some rollover IRA and a regular IRA, which had non-deductible basis in it.
Right.
And I finally managed to move that rollover IRA money as well as all the pre-tax money from the other IRA into my rollover, into my 401k, and now the only money left in my IRA is the basis.
Right.
And in addition, I did a 2015 contribution to that before December 31st.
Okay.
So now my question is there any stature of few months or anything before I convert this to Roth? And before, and the other sub question is, when I convert this to Roth, should I even put the 2016 contribution before converting?
You might as well do the 2016 contribution and then convert the whole thing at once. There's no time limits that we're dealing with right now. So you've got money. You've got some money that was in the Roth to begin with, or the non-deductible IRA. Let me call it. There was some money in the IRA already. It was all after-tax money. You added another $5,500 or so to the traditional IRA, you'll have to file Form 8606 for your 2015 return to show that you made a non-deductible contribution. And then you're going to add another $5,500 or so as a 2016 contribution, and you might as well do that and then convert the whole thing over to the Roth. Or otherwise, you're going to convert all the existing money and then go back, make another contribution to an IRA, and then convert that. So you might as well make the contribution and do one conversion rather than convert, contribute, convert. Saves a step.
Okay, so that's great. And I do have an existing Roth when I was eligible for Roth a few years back.
Okay.
So would this money go into that Roth after conversion, or that will remain separate account?
You can put it into the same Roth account, or you can open a new one. Some people like to create new ones for their conversions because it makes it easier to undo it if they want to undo it between now and when the October 2017 deadline comes around. How big is the current Roth IRA, though, that you have? If it's very small, it's not going to matter too much.
That is about $25,000.
Okay. And how large is this conversion going to be once you put the new 2016 conversion in?
So that will be close to 70.
Oh, wow. You can combine them together or you can keep them separate. Some people, as I mentioned, do like keeping them separate, just in case these assets that you convert take a drop, but the other assets that were already in the Roth IRA don't. You can convert it a little bit, you can undo it, you can recharacterize it a little bit easier. But there's also, you can put it all together if you want. It's just a matter of, it's easier to undo it specifically.
Great. And now that the rollover is done, I don't need any waiting period before IRS will come and...
Oh, you're talking about the money that you moved to the 401k?
Yeah.
No, there's no time frame on that.
Great. All right, so thank you so much, and thank you for your idea of this backdoor Roth. Finally, I will be able to continue contributing into Roth every
Good,
year.
Yeah. For as long as they allow us. We had a call earlier in the hour. I think there is some talk to get rid of the backdoor Roth. John doesn't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I gave it a 50-50, but I don't know.
There's a lot of talk about it.
And I remember Raj's call because the 401k did not want to take the conversion back into or the transfer back into the 401k.
You mean so from the 401k to the Roth, then you got to put it back in.
He didn't want to take the money. The 401k wasn't going to accept the money coming from his IRA because he had a separate IRA that had after-tax money. So he had to go through and push them and say, look, this is just pre-tax money. Here's the law that says I can do this. Just because you don't want me to, please let me. Please let me so I can have some more fun over here.
But do they have to let them do it?
No, they don't have to accept it.
No, they can do whatever they want.
And they don't have to accept it for whatever reason. They don't want to accept it. Now, they can't tell Raj we're not going to accept yours.
And then
tell John Dean
else's.
That we'll accept
right.
John's.
Yes.
It's either we accept transfers in or we, you know, the administrator can be restrictive if they want. Not selectively restrictive, but restrictive across the board.
Now, we're going to be talking about backdoor Roths in, I don't know, a week, week and a half, something like that, just as a main topic. But since he brought it up, let's just bring up what the process is to do this so-called backdoor Roth. Because like Raj, there are many people who make more money than is allowed to contribute to a Roth.
Right. For a married couple, the limit for contributing directly to a Roth IRA stays the same for 16 as it was for 15. It maxed out, if you're making more than $193,000 of adjusted gross income, that's on the front page of the tax return before your itemized deductions. If you're making more than $193,000 as a married couple, you cannot contribute directly to a Roth IRA. I'm trying to remember the single. I think it's 131 for a single individual.
116 to 131 sounds right. Yeah.
If you make more than this threshold, you cannot contribute directly to a Roth IRA. However, there's no limit on who can contribute other than an age limit. There's no adjusted gross income limit on who can contribute to a traditional IRA. Now, there are limits on who can deduct a traditional IRA. And if you are part of a retirement plan at work, where you have a 401k, profit sharing plan, defined benefit plan, any kind of retirement plan at work, and you make more than a certain threshold, this certain threshold we're talking about, you can't deduct the traditional IRA contribution. But you can make the traditional IRA contribution, assuming you're not required minimum distribution age. But you can make the non-deductible traditional IRA contribution. And then there's also no limit on who can convert traditional IRA money to Roth IRA.
No income limit.
There's no income limit. You can, if you have traditional IRA money, you can convert it to a Roth IRA. Now, the problem comes in when you have other IRAs with pre-tax money in it, money where you contributed and you did take a deduction, money that's earnings on the contributions, money that you rolled over from a 401k plan where you've never paid any taxes on it. So when you have other pre-tax IRAs, it messes up the works. And that's what Raj was going through. He was trying to make that disappear. But if all you have is non-deductible IRA contributions, no earnings, and you convert that money over to a Roth IRA, it's a tax-free conversion. There, you've already paid taxes on all the money that's in that account. So by making a contribution today, and because we're at the beginning of the year, we can still make a contribution for 2015, and we can make a contribution for 2016. So if you're under 50, you can put in $11,000 today. If you don't have any other IRAs, it's a non-deductible, and you're part of a 401k or something, over the threshold, you can't contribute to a Roth IRA, but you can contribute to a non-deductible traditional IRA, and then turn around and convert it the next day.
Now,
there's no time commitments.
You mentioned there are problems if you have, like he said, if you have non-deductible money inside an IRA.
All right, let's say I have an $89,000 IRA from a traditional IRA rollover, and I make this $11,000 contribution for 2015-2016. My $11,000 is after tax, and I can identify exactly where it is. But I can't just roll that over when I've got this other $89,000 out there.
It's got to all be proportional.
It's proportional.
Is what it is. Okay. And it's proportional down to the last dollar.
Down to the dollar.
If you had a dollar left, yes, it's 89 cents would be
a dollar.
And 11 cents would be deductible. All right, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. More coming up. Lines are open. Don't go away. Market strategy investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. We finally got some room on the phone, so if you want to call now. Plenty of room, actually, on the phones right now. We got through a bunch of those calls. 877-752-6637. Emails as well. And I saw this. I don't know. Maybe it was email, but it's been going around Facebook.
If it's on Facebook, it must be true.
If it's on the internet, it must be true, which, of course, obviously it's not. It's kind of long. I don't really need to go through the whole thing. Other than, if you've seen it, you know what it is, where they talk about the government referring to our Social Security checks as a federal benefit payment. And they're, according to this person, I don't even know what the actual point of this was.
It's to scare people that the government is taking away everything from you.
Okay, so that's what it was. Here's what they said, okay? If you average $30,000 per year over your working life, that's close to $180,000 invested in Social Security. Well, that's actually a little high.
Well, I mean, based on their numbers, that is a correct number. 40 years of earnings, if you average $30,000 a year and you're paying. Now, they say that the cost of the Social Security benefit is 15%.
But well, that's wrong.
That's not the
that's
true
why I
statement.
Say it's too high.
So, yeah, but their numbers, based on their hypothetical BS, is right. $180,000.
It's not all to Social Security, though. Okay.
Well, the 15% that we're paying, now you're saying 15%? What? I thought it was more like 7. It is. You see, as an employee, 7.65% withheld from your paycheck. But your employer is paying an equal amount, 7.65%. That breaks down into multiple different categories, though. 2.9% of the total is Medicare. So that's not for your Social Security benefit. And within the money that is left over that's going into the Social Security side of it for benefits, there's a portion of it that is an actual insurance premium for the disability coverage. Mm-hmm. There's a portion that's an actual insurance premium for the survivor, widow, widower's family benefits in case you die too soon. So not even all the 12.4% is going into the Social Security benefit that you're going to receive potentially when you retire.
So already it's wrong, but okay, we'll grant you that. Right, we're in a generous mood. Oh, was that Plums Down?
Yeah, I didn't see it. But
anyway. I did. Oh, there it is. All right. Plums down on this. So now, if you calculate the future value, it says, if your monthly investment in Social Security, $375 a month, at a meager, they said, 1% interest rate compounded monthly.
Well, say 1% interest compounded monthly means a 12% annualized rate of return.
Yes.
Bogus return. Not happening.
And they said meager.
Zero. Meager? Nothing's averaged that over 40 years.
After 40 years of working, you'd have more than $1.3 million saved. This is your personal investment. Upon retirement, if you took out only 3% per year, you'd get about $40,000 a year, roughly.
Well, now their math is a little on the
wrong side,
the public education side. They're way off. Now, if you actually could earn 1% a month, not happening. On $375 a month for 40 years, $1.3 million is not the right number. It would be more like $4.5 million. Or if on the other side, if you could earn 1% annualized per year, not 1% a month, but 1% a year, the number would be like $220,000. So no matter which way we look at their numbers, they're quacked. They're wrong.
They're completely wrong. They said that's almost three times more than today's average Social Security benefit of $1,230 per month. Then they add, Google it. It's a fact.
That is one fact. That is roughly the average benefit paid out to individuals right now, average Social Security benefits in the $1,230, $1,240 range. So they're taking this much fact and blowing it up into other proportions.
And your retirement fund would last more than 33 years until you're 98 if you retire at age 65.
Are you kidding? If I had $4.45 million, I could pay out $40,000 a year for a lot longer than 30, 40 years.
Well, and they're talking about the $1.3 million.
Yeah, but the 1.3 million is a hypothetical number that doesn't reality doesn't exist in math universe.
No, it doesn't. It's
wrong.
This person says, I can only imagine how much better most average income people could live in retirement if our government had just invested our money in low-risk interest-earning accounts.
Whoa. If they had only invested it in low-risk interest-earning
accounts. Like what, a treasury security?
Like exactly what it's been invested in for all the years. We make fun of the trust fund, but the trust fund is an accounting ledger that shows all the money in, all the money out. And the money in is not just the payments that we're putting in, it's the interest earned on the surplus. All that surplus on an accounting side is being loaned to the general account, and it is being paid back on the accounting ledger with interest. It is being invested in the most secure, guaranteed interest environment that can happen. It is being invested, exactly like you said it.
Yeah, and they say that they're not paying interest on the debt, they assume.
They are paying interest on the
wrong.
Debt.
So it goes on. It tells you to take a stand. Let's see who forwards this.
It's take a stand for what?
Well, and here's the thing. Here's what the whole thing is on this. This is just a way to get you to forward some kind of text, okay? It doesn't matter what it is. It's inflammatory text. It's totally wrong.
But it's
BS. Completely bogus. If you see something like this, first of all, don't take any of it seriously because it's wrong. It's completely wrong. That, and number two, don't forward it to anybody. Throw it in the garbage.
And try to stifle this right away. I've had people email me things specifically about Social Security, but a lot of other things, and saying, you know, basically attacking the administration on this or the government, the Congress on that. And I'll go through and I'll reply to it and say, well, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And then people will ask me, well, aren't you upset about it? I'm upset about a lot of things the government does, but I want to make sure that when I'm upset about it, it's a fact that I have a reason to be upset about it.
Yes.
Not that I'm upset about something that's a lie, that somebody's telling me that is happening that really didn't happen. We are much better going after them, you know,
for legitimate yes.
BS they do to us than fabricated BS.
Exactly. So don't pass it around. It's a lot of nonsense. You'll probably, like I said, you probably see it on Facebook more than anything else. Because there are people that will post anything, as you probably have seen. All right, 877-PLANNER. We got some room on the phones, 877-752-6637. Emails, you go to wealthed.com, our website, as did Candace in Midlothian, Texas. My husband is younger than I am. I am not working. I am taking my retirement in 2016 when I'm 62. Will I ever be able to apply for his Social Security? Question is, do we have enough information?
Well, baseline, borderline. My assumption is you say when you retire in 2016 when you are 62. Assuming that means that you reach 62 in 2016, now we have an issue. You're going to fall under the new rules that were passed back in November. And whether or not you will ever be able to take a spousal benefit depends on how large your benefit is. If your benefit is very small on your own work record, then there's a likelihood that you will be able to get something as a spousal benefit when your husband actually applies for a benefit. If your benefit is a moderate benefit, equal to basically half of what his benefit is or higher, then no, you're never going to get a benefit from him. And that really, though, has nothing to do with the new law, now that I think about it. If you're going to start at 62, you have to apply for your own benefit first.
You always had to.
Yeah, that's always new. I mean, that's always been there. So whether or not you're going to get a benefit as a spouse depends on whether your benefit is larger than the spousal benefit. If your benefit is larger than the spousal benefit, you're never going to get a spousal benefit. If it's smaller than the spousal benefit, you're going to get a spousal benefit equal to the difference between the two once you're eligible for it.
Okay, so the spousal benefit works roughly like this. You have, let's call it one spouse who's the worker, the other spouse.
Well, let's talk about Candace, and she's married to somebody named Paul.
Okay, well, we'll give Candace's husband a name, Paul. Now, let's say Paul's benefit at full retirement age. Well, let's say Paul's benefit is $2,000 a month at full retirement age.
Right.
Okay? Now, Candace can apply for a spousal benefit. If Candace's benefit is greater than, at age 66, greater than $1,000.
Assuming Paul has applied. Now, in her case, her husband is much younger.
Oh, that's true. I wasn't thinking about that.
So
that's true.
She's not eligible for a benefit. The fact that she turned 62, or if she wanted to wait until she was 66, if she turned 66, but she's not automatically eligible for 50% of his full retirement age benefit unless he has actually applied for his benefit. And if he has applied for his benefit, Now we have the ability to look at a
spouse
benefit.
He must apply for his.
But if he hasn't applied for a benefit, she's not eligible for one.
Yes.
So going back to her situation, she's going to apply at 62. At some time in the future, he will become old enough and apply for a benefit. Whether or not she's going to get a benefit depends on the size of her benefit and the size of his benefit. If her benefit is not at least as much as the spousal, which is, you know, less than half of his, she's not going to get a benefit, or she'll get a little bit of benefit. But if her benefit is a moderate benefit to a large benefit, she's not going to get anything from him, ever.
No. And since she'd be taking it at age 62, even if her benefit, even if she applied and was able to get a spousal benefit at age 66 after all the other...
Well, the easiest way to look at that one is her benefit half of his 62 benefit. It's not an exact comparison because the discount's a little bit different for taking a spousal benefit early and taking your own benefit early. Yeah. But you can kind of get an idea. If your benefit at 62 is more than half of his benefit at 62, you're not getting a benefit.
A spousal
ever.
Benefit.
A spousal benefit.
You're only going to get your own.
You're only going to get your own.
Yeah, which is fine because your own, that means that your own is higher. You wouldn't want a lower benefit.
And if yours is lower than half of his, once he starts taking it, there's a likelihood you'll get some amount of money.
More of your phone calls, more of your emails, some trivia just ahead. 877-PLANNER, our number. Get on board, ask your money question before time runs out on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Blum, answering your money questions. We just got a few minutes left in the program, so if you want to get on board, do so right now. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Coming up Monday on this program, we're going to be talking with Professor Rick Blum about why you need an estate plan. Estate planning, very important. Everything we talk about is important, but estate planning especially, because you've worked all your life. You want your assets to go where they go. You want them for you. But if you don't use them up, you run out of time. You want your everything that you've worked for to go where you want it to go. And if you don't have an estate plan, that may not happen. So we'll talk to you about that on Monday on this program in the first hour. And, of course, everything else that you want to talk about through your phone calls and your emails. You want to email us, you go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Trivia. That's right, trivia. Don't want to forget that. Where did I put that here? Here it is. For Friday, trivia for today, Professor Plum. Did you have any idea? Sally Mae is telling us this. The average American family anticipates borrowing 26% of the total cost of their child's college education, either through student loans or loans taken out by mom and dad. 26%. So what? They're financing the other 85%?
They're paying out of pocket somehow the other 74%. Well, at least I didn't make the average. I was less than that.
You were less than what?
26%.
Less than the 20. You came more out of.
I came more out of pocket, more out of cash flow. I was able to do it without borrowing. Right at the end, that caught up with me, and I borrowed just a little bit to finish the last payment.
Well, it's too bad they didn't stick around and become PhDs and all that, you know? Hey, Dad, I'm going back to school for another 4 years.
Just think of the youngest one graduated in 3 years. Way to go, Laura.
So, in essence, you owe her another year.
Oh, don't think she hasn't said that.
Mm-hmm. Because think of all the money she saved you.
Well, she's thinking about down payment type stuff.
Yeah, down payment, of course, yeah. Well, they don't have enough money to purchase things. Well, okay, there you go. There's your trivia. All right, 877-PLANNER, let's see. David in Bonnie Lake, Washington, with an email. I am married with a household income of $100,000, contributed $18,000 to a deductible IRA, $6,500 to a Roth.
He's got to mean 401k.
I would think so. I got bad advice and cashed in $32,000 inherited non-IRA annuity, thinking it was got a step up in basis.
Mom
passed away. Yeah, it does not. We owe about $80,000 on our house. We have $1 in college that just turned 21. Lastly, my wife sold her business for $65,000 this year, paid off her expenses, and is left with $10,000. Is this enough information to figure out my approximate taxes for the year? You guys are awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you for the question, David. We appreciate that and the compliments. Do we have enough here for that?
I don't think David's going to think I'm all that awesome anymore because, no, not in the least. I'm sorry. I don't know enough information. Your wife sold her business and she ended up with $10,000 in cash, but that doesn't mean anything about what the taxability of the sale was. Her basis, she may have had a cost basis in the assets that she sold, so that not all of the money she received was taxable, or it may be that she had a negative. There's all things going on there. You cashed in $32,000 of an inherited annuity, but $32,000, if it's a non-qualified annuity, most likely there was some amount of that was what your mom or whoever it was that passed away put into it. So not all $32,000 of it is going to be deductible. So there really isn't a lot. Now, you're starting with $100,000. I don't know where you are. You could be $100,000 less the $18,000 plus $32,000 plus $55,000. Or anywhere in between those numbers. So, I can't. This is where you really need to sit with an accountant, who has your history of the business, who has the basis of the annuity, who has all these other factors, and they can give you a very good idea of what you owe.
All right.
Find out pretty soon, anyway.
Yeah, if you give us some more information, that would be helpful. Let's get move along. Kathy in Henderson, Nevada, with a question. Hi, Kathy. How can we help you today?
Yes. I was calling to find out if this is on Social Security. Is there a maximum dollar amount that a married couple can collect from Social Security?
Well, not as a specific threshold. The maximum amount is the maximum Social Security benefit the individual has earned and the maximum Social Security the benefit that the spouse has earned. There's no coordination between the two of them. So if I'm
getting say $1,200 a month, mm-hmm. and my husband is getting $2,000 a month,
okay.
and then he's got additional pensions of $1,200 a month total, that will not affect any of our benefits.
Where is the pension coming from? Was it a government entity or was it from a private company?
Well, actually, I called yesterday and asked a question about the. Elimination.
The windfall elimination? Windfall. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And there was another question that I wanted to ask, and it was in reference to the combination of the two Social Securities and the two pensions from the PERS and the defined benefit plan.
Okay. Well, let's start with the Social Security. There is no maximum amount that you can earn based on the couple. So there's not like... you get $1,200 and he gets $2,000, but a couple can receive no more than $3,000. So somebody's got to give back some of their money. No, that's not the way it works. You're going to get your Social Security benefit. Your husband's
right.
going to get his Social Security benefit. Now, whether he continues to get all $2,000 of it when he starts receiving this pension from a public employer where he did not pay into Social Security, then we have to look at, will he be subject to the windfall and elimination provision? And if he's
But I think we determined yesterday that he did pay into the
Social Security. As long as he's paid into Social Security for at least 30 years at what they call substantial rate, which is currently around $22,000 a year, that's uh-huh. the earnings, not how much you paid into Social Security, then there won't be a windfall elimination provision. So if he's not impacted by the windfall elimination provision, he will get his pension. He will get all of his Social Security. You will get all of your Social Security.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. That's really very helpful.
You're very welcome, Kathy, and thank you for calling back. I remember your call from yesterday. Her husband had been FERS.
FERS is not an issue. PERS, she said.
Oh, PERS. Okay. Well, I think yesterday she
And some of the people in PERS, which is a public employer retirement
right.
system, which are state-run public employer retirement systems, not federal. Some of them do pay into Social Security. Some of them do not pay into Social Security.
In her case, she had said that he did pay into Social Security.
And if he was paying into Social Security at the same time he was paying into the PERS system and earning the pension, no windfall elimination provision, not an issue. It's only when you have that pension from work where you did not pay into Social Security that you may have an issue.
Yes, and even then you may or may not. It just depends on how big the money is. All right, we're out of time for this hour. If you need the Brain Trust, off the air, you can talk to Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors that they have across the country at Lucia Capital Group. Their number, 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. Talk to the professionals at Lucia Capital Group about your retirement. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. It's Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.